This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Good morning. You got me today. Robin is out here. We'll be back tomorrow. Lindsay Clancy is on trial in Plymouth for the deaths of Cora Dawson and Cal and her three children. And nobody's arguing about who did it. The whole fight is whether she knew what she was doing. And prosecutors say the answer is all over her phone. That's the big thing, her phone. Because she checked where her husband was going when he went to get takeout. That means she's a criminal mastermind who wanted to murder her children. We're going to break all this down, and we're going to try and understand it from every perspective here. If you've been watching the coverage, you know what I feel about this already. But we're going to talk about it from the prosecution standpoint. That's actually where we're going to start first. And we're going to talk about it from the defense standpoint. And we're also going to talk about it for what does justice actually look like in a case like this. Joining me today to do all that, it's Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Bob, I know you guys are covering this extensively over on Defense Diaries, and we are as well over here. Let's just start with where a lot of the prosecution, you know, they're seeming to hang their hat. Trial's not even started as of yet, but where we're seeing a lot of the noise come out of, she texted him at 4:53 that she didn't feel like cooking. They ordered dinner at 5:10. He left at 5:15. Prosecutors say that she checked how long the drive was while he went out to get takeout, and that's when she acted. And they're saying, well, if she was out of her mind, how does she pull that off by looking at the app and seeing where her husband is? Well, I mean, the idea of what someone is when they're out of their mind, there's the movie version and there's the real life version, and they don't look exactly the same. People don't understand that a person that is in a psychotic state can seem normal on the outside. But I guess you've been in courtrooms your entire life, and having a jury try to understand some of these kind of basic psychological principles of human beings, will a jury understand that, Bob?
I mean, that is the million-dollar question. And that's why, frankly, to me, this is probably one of the most important cases to come along in probably the last two decades, because it's really putting not just Lindsay Clancy on trial, but it's mm-hmm. also putting the healthcare industry on trial. It's putting Big Pharma on trial, because that's going to be the defense. And to your pointed question, I think, and we'll probably see it in the chat, and I just want to say that obviously I'm destroyed that those three little beautiful babies lost their life. Like, I think we all agree that that is beyond the pall. It's the most horrific thing. And it was at the hand of the person that biologically is supposed to protect those children more than any other person on the planet. So it's mm-hmm. a very, very hard thing for people to kind of look at this case and say, wow, I'm willing to keep an open mind, which is all I'm ever asking anybody to do with this case, which is listen to the evidence. Yeah. Try to learn a bit about mental health and try to learn a little bit about SSRIs. Try to learn a little bit about psychosis and what it really is, and then come to a decision on this case. And it's just human nature is going to make it very, very difficult for people to do that because of the babies. You know, when you have that type of loss at the hand of the mother, people are coming into that courtroom as potential jurors feeling a certain way about it. And they're not wrong to feel that way about it.
I mean,
because at first blush, it's so shocking that it's impossible for you to kind of put that aside. And we're always talking about that on your show, and I'm with you on our show all the time. You know, emotion has no place in the courtroom. As cold and shitty as that sounds, that's the reality of it. We have to deal with the facts and the evidence and the law. That's it. We can't allow for emotions to rule the day and make our decisions in those courtrooms in terms of verdicts based on what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very tall task for the defense. I mean, they don't call, and they call it lack of criminal responsibility in Massachusetts, as opposed to not guilty by reason of insanity. So it's the same beast, different name. And lawyers call that the defense of last resort for a reason. Mm-hmm. It is very, very difficult to get people to understand and appreciate and accept those things that are being told in court as fact when the end result of it is that they have to utter the words not guilty because she lacked the criminal responsibility because of her state of her mind. It's a very, very hard row to hoe, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to get people to see things in black and white. And that seems to be the goal of the prosecution here in this case. Not much of a gray area being presented, which is where reality really exists in this case. You know, in asking 18 jurors here to come and get on the same page is a stiff request, I think, in either direction, quite honestly. This would be a case we'd not be shocked if we have a hung jury. Yeah. Why is the state so reluctant to focus on medical facts and psychology, understood psychology of how these sort of things work, to understand what happened in this case? I mean, are they bound by something that they have to prosecute her at this level because of the crime in this state? Or is this something where the DA looking at this is just not as in tune with the depths and the sad realities of what something like postpartum psychosis actually looks like? Because this is a case where she went to such lengths to get help, and she was drugged 50 different ways to Tuesday from her doctors that couldn't find a way to communicate with the other one on what they're putting her on. This is like such a, to me, it's a pillar example of the medical system screwing up when someone is begging for help and then blaming the victim after they drugged the shit out of her. And I said, see, you did horrible, crazy things. You're an evil woman. This is not that. No. I don't understand. I mean, it's pretty black and white to me in that area of who did what. The state knows that. The DA knows that. Why go pedal to the metal going after this woman who says, yes, I did this, but here's why. Why are they pushing this so hard, Bob?
I mean, the only thing that you can kind of land on is they're bending to the will of the people. Yeah. And again, it's always going to fall back on the fact that, you know, those three beautiful little kids lost their lives at the hand of their mother. And if you were to pull just the public at large without telling them anything about the facts of the case, without informing them anything about what Lindsay Clancy tried to accomplish in terms of getting herself right mentally. And you just told them kind of the factual scenario of what happened. You know, people are going to be inclined to want justice for those kids.
Sure.
And they don't care that it's the mother, and they don't care what may have drove her to do it. You know, that it's just one of those things. We live in a very eye for an eye society. Mm-hmm. And selling the concept that somebody could do something like this while in a state of psychosis, wherein the state is coming and rebutting it, but saying, well, she couldn't have been psychotic. Mm-hmm. Like, she was Googling restaurants. She was buying herself time. Like, you can't be psychotic and do those things, but yes, you can.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, and ultimately at the end of the day, it's going to boil down to whether or not the lawyers can convince. And Kevin Reddington is a fantastic criminal defense attorney. I mean, the guy, if you're going to watch the trial, which I suggest is hard of a trial as this is going to be to watch. And it's going to be all of that, because you're going to be, it's a very triggering trial, but it's an important trial because it's long overdue that our mental health and our health system in this country and big pharma is put on trial. And believe me, that's going to be happening here. This woman was failed. Not just this woman, those children, husband, the in-laws, her mother, her everybody was failed. Because this wasn't, as you said, T, you talked about it.
Yeah.
This wasn't a woman who was secreting away the fact that she was going mad.
No, no. Yeah. And we'll, and I want to get to that when we get to talking about what justice looks like in this a little bit later in our conversation. But you're exactly right. I mean, there's so much failing that went on here. Another factor is we're talking about the prosecution and what they're bringing to the table in this case. 3 months before, she allegedly wrote on her phone that she sort of regretted her older kids. Again, this is not a healthy mind that is making these sort of statements, these sort of thoughts, expressing these sort of thoughts. Anyone who's been with someone or anyone who's had postpartum depression, this is postpartum psychosis. It pushes it way the hell beyond. It's like off the spectrum. It's so much more severe. But it seems, you know, you're going to have little tells, little things like that, little statements like that from a mother who is otherwise loving and devoted to her children. Making statements like that is not a healthy brain. Does that help or hurt the case that this was seemingly an ongoing problem of her being disconnected mentally from her children, making statements like that? Does that help her with the jury?
In it does when it's taken in conjunction with the medical experts that the defense is going to be putting on in terms of explaining this to the jury. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the real purpose of expert witnesses. And if you have good ones, and I hope that they do, I hope that they've hired the best of the best.
Yeah,
because you need people that are able to articulate in a way that lay people can understand and have it resonate truly deeply with them. Mm-hmm. What is going on with the human mind in this particular situation? And because like getting over that hump. You know, because look, on our channel, we went through, there's a civil suit that was filed on behalf of Lindsay against all the medical providers and the facilities that they worked in. Okay. And we went through the entire complaint. Rosemary Scapiccio, who is one of the most outstanding post-conviction lawyers in the country, decided to take this on, and she's handling the civil side of this. And her breakdown of exactly Lindsay's journey, starting with, because she had postpartum when they had their second child. Mm-hmm. It didn't reach the levels that it did when she had Callan. But it was much worse when it hit the third time.
Yeah.
And she realizes it, and she knows, and she's telling her husband, she's telling her mother, she's telling her mother-in-law, like, I can't function. And it was initially, there was a state of mania that she was in, wherein after she had the baby, she was exercising like maniacally. Within 2 weeks, she had like entered a 5K, like after giving birth. Like it was just, she was just, it was a state of mania.
Yeah.
And no one in terms of the treaters asked about that. Because when they're looking at it in terms of bipolar and an onset of bipolar in conjunction with the postpartum depression. So she had two things going on. And whether or not it was the medication itself or it was, you know, kind of pharmaceutical toxicity poisoning, mm-hmm. whatever happened with her when they first gave her the Zoloft to help her sleep because she couldn't sleep, and it had the opposite effect.
Yeah, like
it made everything worse. She was feeling way more anxious. She couldn't sleep at all. And as she continued to try to treat and she would see that what they were giving her wasn't working, she would move on to a different facility. Now, like, you know, and I've seen people and she's a nurse.
Yeah,
she's a prenatal, she's a labor nurse.
And let me ask you about, I mean, how do you think that affects how the jury sees her? Because the prosecution's going to take this and go, see, she knows how to work the system. She's part of the system. If anybody should know how to express to a doctor that she's having these problems clearly and effectively, it's her. How do you counter that?
Because she did. Exactly. Everything that she did, like that's what she did when something wasn't working. She moved on to the next provider, hoping that they could get it right. This is the way that I try to explain this case to people.
Yeah.
All right. You've got Patrick Clancy, who was her husband at the time and the father of all three of those children. And he is going to be testifying on his wife's behalf. This very same woman that took his children's lives. That in and of itself is incredibly powerful because you need to put yourself in that position. If there was any part of you as the husband and the father of those children that thought there was something else going on, that this was something that there was a grander plan, that she had another man on the side, that she no longer wanted to be married to Patrick and be a mom anymore. If there was any thought of that at all, you would know that that man would not be sitting there testifying on behalf of his wife in this trial. And that is what's happening here. Everybody that knows her, she was a loving, doting mother, even when she was fighting through the postpartum depression. Like Patrick is saying, like, even though we knew that she was going through it, it still never affected the love that she was displaying and showing with the children.
No.
So, you know, like anything, when her mind starts to go wrong, she's not hiding it. She's telling her providers, and she she ends up going to four different facilities.
Yeah.
And none of them are speaking to one another in terms of their treatment plans. It's like, if we had the time, I would sit here and read through about 40 paragraphs of this complaint because it lays it out perfectly but watch the trial. This is what the defense is going to be. And this entire case for the state rests on that thing that you said in the open. Mm-hmm. This concept that she planned, that it was premeditated. Mm-hmm. Like this, like that's the hurdle that's going to be so difficult for the defense and their experts to get people to get over, which is that people just have the movie version, like you were saying, of what psychosis is. And that's not reality. Movies are not reality.
Yeah.
You can be absolutely psychotic, and it is not a 24/7 symptom heavy situation wherein you can't function normally at any point during the day. That's not how it works.
No,
that is not how it works. And you know, when you have the auditory hallucinations, wherein it's the voice, the mm-hmm. deep male voice, commanding voice, telling her, you know, the things that she's saying that it was saying to her, which again, it's going to come out at trial that this is not something that was a mystery to anybody. Like she was trying to get it fixed, and all they kept doing was pumping her with drugs. And the Seroquel, when they gave it to her, when they finally diagnosed her with the onset bipolar, is what put her over the edge. And I can tell you that when they gave my 82-year-old father Seroquel to try to help him sleep, that within 46 or 48 hours, he came up. He's like, I cannot take this. This makes me feel like I'm crazy. He's like, the racing thought. Like, I've seen so many people talking about what Seroquel has done to them. Mm-hmm. This trial is going to shine a bright light on what Big Pharma has been doing to people in this country, starting with the opioid epidemic and moving on from there.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's like people want to point a finger at somebody. The problem is it's a lot of somebodies, and the last of which is Lindsey Clancy. I hate to tell you.
No, 1,000%. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, where you're talking there about the prosecution of Lindsey Clancy, what we're likely to be seeing here in the coming weeks at trial. Now let's move on over to the defense. Reddington isn't disputing that Lindsey Clancy killed her three children. He offered to put it in writing. His entire case is that the woman who did it wasn't there, that she'd been begging for help for months, and every single person around her missed it. We're digging into the defense of Lindsey Clancy now. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, with us as always to help break down these tough cases. She told her husband at the end of December that she was having thoughts of hurting her kids. She checked herself into a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Eve. 19 days after they discharged her, her children were dead. The case should be a referendum and spotlight on our broken mental health system. But it's not. It's going after another victim of the mental health system. Will her story help people see the reality of how broken this system is? Bob, do you think, I know if people are paying attention to it closely and are objective, they will hopefully see it. Do you think this will shine a bigger light on it beyond the true crime fans who are watching this sort of thing as closely as we are?
God, I hope so. I really do. You know, it's like I've been working in the criminal justice system for decades, and my biggest frustration always in dealing with prosecutors was getting them to acknowledge, first and foremost, that mental illness is a real thing. I think if we were able to kind of calculate the crimes that are committed and put them into either one of three buckets, which is addict, mental illness or defect, or both, that 90% of crimes and the people that are committing them would fall into one of those three buckets.
Yeah.
And you know, trying to get to humanize defendants with prosecuting attorneys in this, because of the shift to where truth is not what's at stake, it's convictions, because that's what gets people elected. When that happened, and that happened long, long ago, because make no bones about it, prosecutors are elected officials. It is a political job. I'm tough on crime is always the rallying cry. And what I do to prove that is I show you my prosecutor's record is, you know, I have a 98% conviction rate. That's what they do to sell themselves, that they're tough on crime, because people want to live in safe communities.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an easy sell for a prosecutor. I'm going to make where you live safer because I'm going to put the bad guys away. And when you have that battling with the concept of reality.
Yeah.
And the concept of that we're dealing with human beings in every different case is its own story. Like there are no two cases are the same. It's like I was going through our live on Clancy and a lot of people in chat. Yeah, it reminds me of Andrea Yates down in Texas back in the early 2000s. I'm like, no.
they're all
different cases. They're all different circumstances.
And if you're just following it as a bumper sticker, unless you're into this stuff, that's most of the general public is a bumper sticker. It is I'm tough on crime. Well, that's great. You're tough on crime, but let's actually define what's a crime, right? And what's just padding the record here to show that you have another person behind bars, whether they should be or not. That's not necessarily dealing with reality. And this is one of those cases where, you know, it is not Andrea Yates. And we've seen plenty of cases where the mom should go, you know, take a flying leap off a cliff and just be gone for the monstrous shit that they've done while being sane. Ruby Frankie comes to mind. There's several others. But this is a case where Lindsey Clancy did everything right. That's what strikes me about this. This is not someone who just sat there and went, well, this is me, deal with it, and then crazy things happened. This is someone who recognized it enough to have 13 psychiatric drugs, 13 scripts, 13 different times a doctor had to go to their pad and go, oh, you should have this. And throughout those 13 times, they didn't communicate with the other doctors. It also wrote her scripts as well. That's part of the civil suit. That's a whole conversation unto itself. But this is a case where this woman, exhausted all of the roads to go down, and at every single turn she was failed. Now, I don't look at these doctors and go, I'm sure you were conniving and trying to kill her and make her do crazy. No, but the system is broken the way it communicated. It could have caught itself. It did not. But because the system failed her in all those different ways, you put anybody, take postpartum psychosis out of it, take bipolar out of it, take you or me, take a person who can't be pregnant, and let's go on a cocktail of 13 different benzos, SSRIs, antipsychotics, and you name it, over the course of a few months, and let's see how you're doing on the other side of it. I'm going to guess a lot like Lindsay Clancy, no matter how much you love your children or anything around you, you're not going to be thinking clearly. That just seems to be a factual piece of this case, but for some reason it's up for debate, as if that's not even a factor in this damn thing. A lot of people watching this, you know, are on something a doctor gave them. How can the state pretend that this wouldn't play a major role in her behavior, Bob?
It's a great question, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it lacks humanity for me.
It does.
You know, like that part of, you know, the white hat, which is, you know, what they consider the prosecutors to be in this country. You know, they have a duty to the citizens of this country, and to be lacking humanity in doing that job is unforgivable in my eyes. It just is.
I mean,
that's not to say that there's not great prosecutors in this country and
yeah,
good people doing the jobs, but you know, when it breaks down to the point where you're asking yourself, like, who looked at this? Like, at the end of the day, who rubber stamped this thing to try her on this case without taking into consideration what they know are facts?
Yeah.
They know exactly. They got all of her medical records. This isn't a mystery to them. They know what the background is, and they're choosing to act as if psychosis doesn't allow for a person to put a logical thought together while it's coursing through their minds. And it's disingenuous, and they know it. And they're going to go into that courtroom, and they're going to put on doctors who I'm assuming are going to be completely full of shit. Like, any doctor that's going to be testifying on behalf of the state in this trial, that it's going to get up there and say that, no, that's not possible. If you're in the state of psychosis, you can't possibly put together logical thoughts. You couldn't possibly premeditate this kind of thing, are completely full of shit, and they should lose their license to practice. Yeah.
They're the types that are on the commercials going, tell your doctor that this is right for you, where it's like, they'll take the payday. They'll do whatever they need to do. I mean, and there's shitty doctors out there like that. That's why we're in a state. And I'm not saying the doctors that were her doctors did that, but when you have expert witnesses being called and such, if you have somebody that's going to go up on the stand, there's no psychological doctor worth their weight in salt that could go up and say that someone in an active psychosis couldn't premeditate things, couldn't plan things. Look at all of the cases where we do deal with psychopaths that are premeditating shit left and right, and they're able to mingle into society and nobody's the wiser. That's how this shit works. And why this is such a mystery, I don't know. But clearly, I mean, we still have states in the union that don't even recognize an insanity defense in any capacity.
Idaho,
exactly. I mean, that and that may be shocking to some people, but it's true. We are very behind the times, to, I think, put it nicely, in our court system, of what we recognize as the root cause and problems of the crimes that we face that are committed. And I don't know why we, in a case like this, she's not asking, let me be free and go live a life and love. She's like, lock me away in a mental institution for the rest of my life. I'm cool with that. They literally, in so many words, came to them and said, she's cool with that. Can't we just do this way? And the DA in the court said, nope, we're going full bore, pedal to the metal. You are an evil bitch and you must go to prison. That to me has just been baffling. Are you surprised, Bob, as a defense attorney, that this made this all the way to trial, despite the concessions that she and her team themselves have given? We know she did it. She says she did it. She's suffering horribly through all of this too. She doesn't want, she's just lock her away in a safe place, not in a prison. That's not a safe place for someone who's done this. Why was that a bridge too far for the prosecution here that we got to a trial? Are you surprised we're going to trial?
No, I'm not.
No,
that's how the system works, man. Like the system is broken. Like many of our systems in this country, the criminal justice system is broken. It's that thing that I was talking about. Like my the biggest thing that I was smashing my head against a brick wall during my career was the fact that I could not get the prosecutors to acknowledge that mental illness is an actual thing and they have to take it into consideration when deciding whether or not to charge people.
Yeah.
You know, take it into consideration. Like when I was starting to wind up my practice in terms of like retiring, a prosecutor that ended up winning on this is not something I typically do, but she was running on the platform that she was going to acknowledge addiction and mental health in her term as prosecutor. And I was all about it. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. I've been waiting for this prosecutor for my entire life as a lawyer. And I'm going to stick her yard sign in my yard because I want her to win because that's how important it is. And she did win. And then she did what she said she was going to do. There is now a mental health court. Mm-hmm. And like every state, every county has to have a mental health court because it's the only way, because there you're having social workers involved with it. There's people that are not lawyers and judges and cops and prosecutors that actually understand what's going on with people that are working to try to make people better. To help people, to help their with the mental illness, because punishment ain't it. Mm-hmm. Like throwing somebody who's mentally ill in prison is the exact opposite of what needs to be done. Like if you don't give a shit about people and crimes are black and white, oh, you committed the crime, put them away. I don't give a shit. See you later. Well, good on you. Like that's not how I live my life. I value humanity far more than that. And, you know, and I'm not going to judge people on how they think about it. But like for me, I care about humanity. Like to me, it's important. Like I see a glaring, gaping hole in the system that needs to be fixed. And there's a way to go about doing it. It just has to come about. There have to be people that are willing to do it on that side of it. And so when I started seeing it happening on a small scale, at least it gave me hope. You know what I'm saying? At least it gave me some hope. So the hope is, like you said, Tony, getting beyond the true crime fans that are going to be paying attention. Will this case resonate nationally to the extent where people that don't watch true crime will see it and they'll be like, wow, holy shit, that really makes me think. Because I'm going to tell you right now, this country and frankly, the entire world, we are teeming with mental illness.
Yes.
Like mental illness is not getting better. We are fucking filled, pardon my French, we are filled with crazy in this country. Look at the news every single day. And that's scratching the surface of the amount of crazy that is going on in this country on a daily basis. People have lost their minds.
It's the root cause of 90-some% of the cases that we talk about, 100%. And yet the court system itself treats it like it's almost non-existent in some areas. And as a majority of the country, I would say it treats it like that across the board. Its default mode is not to identify or look in that area when that is the root cause. It's almost like going to a fire. Someone's house is burning down and something going, well, clearly there's flames flying out of the house. Well, have you checked the mouse traps? Do you think the mouse traps are the problem? It's like, we're not talking about infestation of rodents. There's a house fire right here. But those mice are going to eat shit in the pantry. That's not what we're talking. And that seems it seems to be at this point in our history, chosen ignorance, if you will, because it's an icky topic. It is somewhat more complex and difficult to understand. It's not as black and white as we like things to be, but our society needs to step up and go, yeah, most of the cases that we discuss fall in that area. And it doesn't give anybody a pass for their crimes, but it also doesn't make everything black and white either. If we're going to fix anything, we have to identify what the actual problems are and not treat them all as the same, which it feels like they're doing here. Patrick Clancy is testifying. That's her husband. There is some ambiguity right now. The Boston Globe reporting yesterday that they're divorced. Up until this point, we thought that they were still married. I don't know the answer to that. That's what the Globe had reported. Either way, I don't think it necessarily means a whole lot. She's never going to be in a state to be out, and it's understandable why someone would divorce, but still very much stand by their wife's side, their former wife's side, if that's in fact what the title is today, because he empathizes with her. He understands what she went through. He was right there. He was closer to this than any other living person, not the DA, not the judge, not the jurors, not the justice system. He was there. He's standing by her side. He's saying he forgives her because he understands why this happened and how she was failed. How much of a not guilty, guilty verdict depends on his testimony, Bob?
I think it's huge. I think it's an absolutely huge thing. I think that him standing by her, because like you said, he had a front row seat. And not only that, I mean, he's the one making the phone calls. Like when she gets on the Seroquel, it's him, Patrick, making the phone calls to the doctor saying, I don't know what you got her on, but she's 10,000 times worse than prior to you giving it to her. And what do? They up it from 50 milligrams of Seroquel to 400 milligrams. This, like, he was actively working with her to try to get her better. Like make no bones about it. I mean, she put herself in inpatient for 5 days, it turned out to be, because she didn't know what was happening. And then like this, like when people are sitting there telling me that she was a nurse and she understands how the drug, you just don't understand mental illness. When like you are the people that are saying that, well, she was a nurse, she understood, she was pill seeking. I'm like, what on God's green earth are you talking about?
Yeah, she wanted to go get hopped up on 13 different drugs. Right, like, that's what she was.
People that need to watch the trial, T. Like, because they just don't. They're not dealing with the reality of it. And here, before we move on to the next thing,
yeah.
So Patrick is huge.
Yeah.
I thought it would be very instructive. It's not super lengthy, and I'll kind of break it down. I want to read the jury instruction in terms of lack of criminal responsibility so that people going into this trial will understand where the burdens lay, who's got the burdens, and what has to be shown by the defense prima facie, meaning on the front end, before the burden shifts to the state. So it'll be good, and I'll run through it quick. So the jury instruction is called lack of criminal responsibility, which in some states is not guilty by reason of insanity. So if the Commonwealth has proved the elements of the offense by beyond a reasonable doubt. So just so you know, going into this trial, the state is still going to, even though Lindsay is admitted, everybody knows that she did the acts, they still have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So that part of the trial is going to take place. If you're wondering why, that's why, because they have to still prove it up, and they have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So if those elements are proven, the Commonwealth must also prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was criminally responsible at the time of the alleged offense. Not what she's like now, not what she was like before, but on the day of, at the time of the offense. Under the law, the person is not guilty if they lacked criminal responsibility when they committed the offense. This is sometimes referred to as guilty by reason of insanity or not guilty by reason of insanity. There is no burden on the defendant to prove that they lacked criminal responsibility. the Commonwealth may meet its burden of proving a defendant was criminally responsible for their conduct in either of two ways. The first way is for the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not suffer from a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense. They're not going to be able to meet that burden. All right. So that one, we know from her medical records that she was definitely diagnosed with PPD and as well as onset bipolar.
Yep.
So a mental disease or defect need not fit into a formal medical diagnosis. It is a legal term, not a medical term. It does not, however, include an abnormality that presents itself only by repeated criminal or otherwise antisocial behavior. It is for you, remember this is a jury instruction, to determine from the evidence whether the defendant had a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense. The second way for the Commonwealth to prove a defendant was criminally responsible for their conduct is for the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that even if the defendant suffered from a mental disease or defect at the time of the alleged offense, the defendant nonetheless retained the substantial, and this is the most important language, this is where the case is going to live. The defendant nonetheless retained the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of their conduct and to conform their conduct to the requirements of the law. Okay, so it goes on, but that is the heart of it. That goes to the phone data. That's where the state is living. They're going to say, look, she had the capacity to understand. She sent her, like their story is they sent her husband off to the furthest restaurant away, which was only a 9-minute drive.
It wasn't far. Yeah.
It wasn't far, you know, but like, that's their story. Like that she did this planning, that this is premeditated. That shows beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of her conduct. A lot of states don't have that aspect of it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but Massachusetts does. And, you know, what goes on to say after that, it says to establish that the defendant had the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of their conduct, the Commonwealth must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant appreciated, that is, that the defendant knew or understood in some meaningful way that their conduct was either illegal or wrong. So that's where this case is going to live. This is going to be a battle of the experts. And this is where the people are going to be, well, she was Googling restaurants and like she sent them away. Like that's where those people are going to live there. They're going to be, that proves it. And that's where I'm saying we have to get the experts that are going to say, okay, take a step back, take a breath. People that are in psychosis can have rational thoughts.
Yeah.
They can, but see the problem for the state is if the jury comes to believe the fact that she was having these auditory hallucinations, which are different than thoughts. So like, if you look at some of the things that she's quoted as saying, sometimes it's I when she's saying something, and sometimes it's you when it's the voice speaking to her. Mm. She's like, you are never going to get better. You have to kill yourself. You have to kill the kids in order to be able to kill yourself. Like these, like this is the voice that she's hearing. And if there's experts that are able to get people to understand that there are people that exist in this world that have mental illness wherein you cannot delineate reality from what is going on in your mind. It becomes so blurred that you have no idea what's real and what's not real.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, but it's going to be a challenge, man, because Americans just don't think that mental health and mental illness is a thing. They just don't, unless they've experienced it firsthand. Yeah.
That in itself says a lot about how rampant our mental health problems are. The fact that there is such a barrier up in so many minds to accept the reality of it, that says a lot, despite how much of it is in every single one of our lives, every single day. I think most don't even realize it half of the time. I want to go into another section here. Your thoughts on the defense and where this is going in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Go and give us your thoughts there right now. Let's talk about what justice actually looks like in this case. Three kids are dead. Cora was 5. Dawson was 3. Callan was 8 months. Whatever this jury comes back with, none of that changes. So the only question left is what we actually want a courtroom to do about it. So the big question is, what exactly does justice look like? And are we going to get to justice, you know, quote unquote? It's another bumper sticker type phrase that people like to throw around when you want things to go in one direction or the next. One of the things that struck me here in this is the judge said, you know what, we're not going to let these women who the defense had found, who've been through postpartum psychosis, testify about it, to give their experience, to help the jury understand what it's like from a first-person perspective to be living through such an experience and remarkably survive it as well. There are expert witnesses the judge is allowing to come on, doctors, to explain it, but the women who've lived it, the judge said, no, the jury can't hear from you. Can we get to justice, quote unquote, if the courtroom is actively prohibiting the jury from getting the context of the very problems they're trying to litigate?
Allie and I had an amazing conversation about this, like in that ruling.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I understand and agree with what Kevin was saying, Kevin, her attorney, you know, because, and I put it this way to Allie, if you're a juror, what is going to be the most instructive, helpful thing for you as a juror to hear about the realities from people that have actually lived it in comparison to an expert that has probably never experienced it firsthand and is just talking about it? There's a certain weight that can only come from those that have lived it, that an expert will never be able to fill that gap. That's where I worry about in the case, because it would have a huge impact if they could parade 30 people into that courtroom and say, I lived this. This is what my experience was. And having the jurors hear it firsthand from people that have no reason to come into that courtroom and lie. They'd be forced to deal with the reality that this does exist in the world, and this is what it can look like, and this is what it can result in. That being said, the counter argument ultimately is that if we allowed that to happen, that it would ultimately end up in being 30 mini trials. Like every single person that would come into that courtroom, oh, well, so you went, you were psychotic, but you didn't kill your kids, did you? Oh, you got in a car and drove, you know, it was the argument that was being made in the courtroom. And it's the correct argument, because it could work against Lindsay. We say, okay, well, look, this person went psychotic and she handcuffs herself to the bed. That's what she did. She didn't kill her. You know what I'm saying? And like, so when you're talking about, again, every story is its own case.
Yeah.
Every individual is their own person. No two people are the same. Where I feel that the weight of that would be incredibly powerful, I worry about the other side of it.
There's another side to that coin, and I think that you spelled it out very, very eloquently there on what that means. Because true, I mean, if they were to allow that, I mean, as much as I completely agree, I think they'd be incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
But would it be prejudicial somewhat? I mean, then could the prosecution then parade in 15 other women who've gone through this who are not remotely sad about it or remorseful, and you could have a parade of people that, oh my God, look at these monstrous people who've come in here who are psychotic, and they're like, yeah, I'm glad the kids are gone, you know, in their own story. I mean, probably hard to find that, but you could flip the coin and flip it the other way of, yes, these ones survived it this way, these ones have a very different outlook on it, and these are all individual cases that are not this specific case. So I hear you there.
Yeah.
But what good, I guess, the biggest question, what good, and this is like the biggest question I have for the state, the DA, what good comes from putting a disabled woman, a physically disabled woman, a woman who has suffered from this mental disability now, in prison forever, who will forever hold the grief of what this mental illness did to her and her children those years ago? I fail to see how that is justice in this case for those children.
I mean, Todd just threw up a comment. I don't know whether it was accidental or if he meant to, but it was Angie9267 said, guilty, but insane, in my opinion, allegedly. Yeah. But she did strangle her three young kids. That's where this case lies with people. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like people cannot put the act aside. Yeah. People just live in the act being the fact that she unalived her three kids. Like that act for some people, and I am no one to judge. Everyone is allowed their opinion on this case. It is a very, very difficult case. All I can ever ask is to have an open mind and listen to the evidence, because maybe, just maybe, you'll learn something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
In terms of mental illness. So, I mean, that's where it lives, man. It's an eye for an eye. Somebody has to pay for it. And unfortunately, they didn't charge the medical providers or the institutions that did it or Big Pharma, because they can't. Yeah. Even though the real responsibility, in my estimation, lies with those medical providers, with Big Pharma, because ultimately, man, it's inexcusable in terms of the deviation from the standard of care that took place with every single doctor that she saw, them not having any knowledge of what she was on prior to and just continuing to pile on is absurd.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's if you were to go to a gas station and they were to you end up pumping Red Bull into your engine, and then your car obviously doesn't function correctly. It's 30% Red Bull and 70% gasoline, and everything goes to shit, and your car fails, and you're on the highway, and you cause a big accident. They're not going to be looking necessarily at the driver of the vehicle or the vehicle. They're going to, who the fuck put Red Bull in the gas? I mean. That would be the problem. That, like, who decided this was a good idea? And then you go to the next one, and they're doing Monster Energy in their gasoline, and cars are crashing. I mean, these sort of things would be looked at the source, but we live in a country where these sort of institutions, if you will, are so legally protected from prosecution that when the villagers have their pitchforks and their flames, they want blood. They want somebody. And since they are so protected, well, looks like Lindsay's the one that they're going to be going after. If those weren't so protected in the way that they are from prosecution criminally, do you think she'd even be on trial? Do you think there'd be this much vitriol against the woman if simply on a public stage, a public forum, a courtroom, those entities could face true charges for their incompetence? Would the public be feeling this? Is this so much more? The public wants their villain, and that is the true villain. But since we can't go after them, they're going after her instead.
Well, we can, but it's civilly, and it doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah. No,
that's just money. And big pharmaceutical companies don't give a fuck if they have to pay out, $300 million.
Yeah, it's baked in already. Yeah.
It's baked into their, it's one of the hazards of their trade. So, like, as far as that goes, man, yes. Do I think that there would be a positive impact on holding them responsible criminally? Absolutely. You know, but like the big question is, how do you do it? Who's the person responsible? Are you putting Big Pharma? I mean, it's like, go watch the second or third season, or maybe it was the first season of Goliath, which was fucking great.
Yes,
right? Like,
yes,
and you know, I mean, and that like really went to the heart of it. And, you know, like Dope Sick, like there's, it's out there for people if they're willing to kind of dig into what Big Pharma is doing to all of us. Mm-hmm. And somebody had asked a great question. Allie had said, and I wanted to address it. It was up a little. So Allie Foley had said, Bob, do you think that there's a big problem with people thinking these meds are an instant fix when they aren't? Yes.
Yeah.
But of course, look, the pharmaceutical trade in terms of, like, I don't know if you remember, Tony, back in like when I was getting out of law school, pharmaceutical reps, they would always hire beautiful young women to go like to go into doctors' offices and push their shit. And they'd say, and you know, so when doctors are when they're prescribing something to people, that is something that Big Pharma has come in and sold them to say, okay, look, you know, I know these other companies have this shit, but our shit's the good shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got somebody to sell it to you. This is what we want you to push. And those doctors aren't digging into the FDA shit. They're not looking at what the black box warnings are. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I've never had a doctor prescribe something wherein they go into a laundry list of the, you know, the negative impact that the drug can have on you. Right. So it's like, you know, doctors will hand you a brochure. Yeah. Read up on it. You know,
isn't that your job?
Yeah, thanks,
as a doctor.
Yeah, so, I mean, absolutely, I think that's a huge issue. You know, and the other part of it is that there is medication out there that helps with bipolar and you know, manic depressive type stuff is I think, can be handled through pharmaceuticals. But, you know, the problem with a lot of these drugs that are kind of driving at some of the more intense mental health diseases and that are effective is that when the people take them for an extended period of time and they work, mm-hmm. they then think they've become cured.
Yeah.
So inevitably what they end up doing is they don't like the way that it makes them feel.
Yeah.
Like globally, totally. There's something that makes them feel not normal, but even though they're not having the delusions and the things that they were dealing with, you know, and so what they do is they get off their meds and they'll do it secretively. They won't tell their family members that they're off their meds. And then of course they slip right back into the illness. And it's like that vicious cycle because the drugs do impact you. They do make mm-hmm. you feel a certain way. And that way is not normal, but it's allowing your mind to operate in a way that you're able to function in society again, you know? So it's like, I mean, we know so little about the human mind, like in general, even the most brilliant doctors on the planet, like know very little, you know?
Well, and something I was thinking of earlier in this case, you know, we look back in time, 100-120 years ago, leeching would have been a common practice. I mean, it makes me wonder 100 years from now, how they're going to be looking back at our point in times and specifically our court system, as we were talking about earlier, how it barely recognizes mental health as being a core issue to half the things we talk about. If they're going to look back on that shit going, wow, they were really off base on how they handled
shit,
things.
Bro.
That's like some Stone Age shit that mental health wasn't part of the equation here. Holy shit. It's all of the equation. One more in Massachusetts.
I could talk about this for 8 hours.
I know. But we only got so much time.
I know.
In Massachusetts, a first degree conviction is life. There's no parole. The judge doesn't get a say. It's pretty black and white and how that gets doled out, which makes the decisions of a judge even more important as far as what he allows in or what he allows out in a case like this without prejudice. In your opinion, Bob, thus far in, and we've talked about some of the decisions that are made, how do you feel about the judge so far? Is this a fair judge that's handling this case?
I feel like he is. You know, he made a negative ruling for the defense yesterday regarding some late disclosed experts that they argued before they started picking the jury. And, you know, I think he's a thoughtful judge. I think he's a seasoned judge. I don't think this is his first rodeo. And I think that he's been pretty even handed, to be honest with you. I'm not getting any kind of like, this guy's a shitbag judge and he doesn't know what he's talking about. I felt quite the opposite. And I feel that he's he's pretty open with his decisions, and he's thoughtful, and I think he gives both sides grace to get their arguments out. So I have a lot of respect for him. In terms of the decision he made yesterday, I mean, he upheld, the motion by the state to exclude these witnesses that the defense disclosed late. But he said, look, you know, you've got your experts for the lack of criminal responsibility. They're set in stone, right? And that's where the heart of the case lives. Like, mm-hmm. if these doctors, one of them being La Posada, which all the people that are Reed people are going to like, oh, we love Dr. La Posada, and she's a fabulous witness. She truly is. But like, she was going to be getting into other things in terms of like, if the state is going to try to basically imply to the jury that Lindsey Clancy's fall from the window, which she became a paraplegic from, was all just window dressing. And then, she had like done it just to make it seem like, you know, and things went terribly wrong for her and she ended up breaking her back. You know, like if they were going to go that route, that they were going to bring La Posada on to try to counter that argument. So the judge was like, ultimately, where he granted the motion for the state, he did say, you know, look, after their opening and the state goes first, if it appears that that's the route they're going to take, I'm going to revisit it for you to the defense. And we'll have that discussion. If you think you're going to need to call them, then, you know, I'll revisit it. So to me, the guy's been even handed. And that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
Like, I just want a judge that's going to follow the law, you know?
He ain't gull.
He ain't gull, bro.
He ain't no gull.
Yeah. Oh, boy, and I might have a gull story for you down in a couple weeks, buddy, that's going to blow your fucking mind.
Oh, I can hardly wait. All right. Well, then we'll wrap up our conversation here on that. We'll be covering this for the next several weeks. I know you guys are covering it over on Defense Diaries every single day as well. So be sure to go check out Defense Diaries. Press subscribe, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts to check out Bob and Allie's coverage over there. And
yes, Buried, my pride and joy podcast. I'd like Todd to come on as a independent listener of the podcast and tell the people what he thinks about Buried. Because me talking about what a great podcast and Tony, who's my dear friend, doesn't carry as much weight because, you know, he's my guy. Todd, who's also my guy. But, you know, Todd independently came up to me, Buried inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Todd was like, man, we were listening to it on the way to Tony's wedding. They had a long drive. And you made my heart beat in my chest. You made it just look like grow two sizes because your rave reviews meant everything to me. So thank you for that, Todd.
Well, I went into it thinking it was just going to be, you know, 10, 11, 12 episodes. It was going to be the tapes and your take on it and all this. And then the doors got blown open. You blew the doors open on some stuff, Bob. And after every episode, me and the other people in the car driving down to the wedding just sat there with our mouths wide open. And we hated to stop and get gas because we had to stop the podcast in order to go do that. And we did have to take bathroom break. It's absolutely incredible. If you think you know this story, if you think there's nothing more out there on this story, it's going to blow your mind.
Thank you for that. Like, I mean, I couldn't say anything better than that. So thank you for that, Todd. I really appreciate that.
You got it. Good stuff.
Go check that out wherever you get podcasts. It is a great listen, especially if you're going like they were on a road trip coming to the wedding. It's a great road trip listen, without a doubt. Yeah, so if you still got a summer road trip in store, be sure to check that out. All right. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this show, and be sure to give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversations right there. Until next time, for Bob, for Todd, and for Robin, I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.